I don't see any prospect for an agreement within the present paradigm at all. Now, Europe is a complete block on the whole process. I mean, their aim is to undermine it because they want the war to continue. They want a ceasefire, not a solution. They want a ceasefire in Ukraine so that they can go back in, rearm, retrain. They say this explicitly. It's not my presumption. They want to retrain the Ukrainians and they want to continue the war with Russia because our elites in Europe are desperate. They have nothing else to hold the European Union and the whole NATO together other than flying the flag. Let's rally to the flag of Ukraine, part of Europe. It's not part of Europe. They're Slavs, just as Russia are Slavs. Genetically, they have no connection with Europe any more than Russia is a European state. So, you know, but let's, you know, support our European family against those dangerous Slavs in the East. And this is the only thing, because otherwise everything will fracture. Can you? I mean, I was in the European Union working for the security and foreign policy chief for several years, Javier Solana, who was a former secretary general of NATO. And I was part of his staff and lent by the government to him for that purpose. And I remember him saying to me, you know, the Americans are really pressing us to take on the new Europeans, as the Americans called it. This is Poland, the Baltic states, all of those former Soviet elements. And he said, you know, I mean, it's going to be a disaster. It's going to break Europe, ultimately, if we do it. And you know why they did it? Because, you know, old Europe, France and Germany, voted against going to war in Iraq, the second Iraqi war. You remember the French said, oh, no, yeah, we disagree. So America started empowering, if you like, new Europe to become the tail that wags the European dog, which it is. I mean, the Baltic states have almost all the top jobs in Europe, despite being, you know, pinpoints on the map. And there are great fractures between the Mediterranean states and the austerity states, all these things.
And as it's turning out, that tail is still trying to wag the dog, even as we speak here. I want to show you this comment by Kaja Kallas, basically the foreign diplomat for the European Union. She was asked by a reporter, is Trump the only one that can bring peace, and will you follow what he says? What's your reaction?
Of course, for any plan to work, it needs Ukrainians and Europeans on board. So this is very clear. Also, we have to understand that in this war, there is one aggressor and one victim. So we haven't heard of any concessions on the Russian side. I mean, if Russia really wanted peace, it could have, you know, agreed to unconditional ceasefire already some time ago.
And actually, at the head of that soundbite there, the reporter said, will you follow Trump's plan? And she straight up says no, and then goes on to explain whatever. So, I mean, that's if Zelensky in that opening dialogue we talked about there is telling, now admitting to everyone that Trump is trying to pressure him into an outcome and he didn't want to do it. And now here's Kaja Kallas for the European Union saying, yeah, his plan's not going to work. So who's it going to work for?
Everybody in Europe, all the Europeans, the coalition of the willing, as they call it, are coaching Zelensky and training him to say no. That's it. They are trying to block any resolution of this. It's very clear. And as I say, the aim ultimately is not to go themselves and fight a war with Russia, but to bring America into the conflict in some way. So they want, if you like, a process in which Russia is trapped into a ceasefire.
And I'm sorry, and Mr. Ambassador, let me ask you a question on that. I want to go on. That's just a couple of times you said that, and that leads to a disturbing question, which I would like to openly address. Mm. If the Europeans are trying to draw the United States into a Pearl Harbor's top situation so that they can have a controlled war, what is the purpose of that? What are they trying to, what's the outcome? What would they hope to achieve? And as important, equally important, maybe more so, what about the morality of literally trying to start a war just to achieve some policy outcome? That doesn't seem to be what Europe used to stand for.
It's completely devoid of morality in Europe now. This is just cynical power plays that are taking place, I'm sorry to say. I mean, don't believe all that talk about European values. You know, they have been overridden and sort of blanked out during this period. And so what are they looking for? Well, Europe needs, as Europe had in the past, it needs resources. It needs cheap energy. And now it is bereft of all of that. It's bereft of gas, natural pipe gas. It's bereft of now even refined products under sanction. Our energy costs, if you take a country like Britain, are the highest in the world. The electricity costs are the highest in the world. Energy costs in Europe are the highest, bar any. It's about six times what you do have in Europe. What is your manufacturing base? What is your business model? They're at odds with the United States. They're at odds with China. There's no business model. And indeed, they suffer from a fractured economy, a completely bifurcated economy. We have 10% in Europe who live the life of Riley, who are what are called the cornucopia sector of the economy, and the rest are slowly sinking. I'm talking to you from Europe, where there has been no increase in real wages since joining the euro, which was in 93, I think. 92, 93, it joined it. No, I mean, a slow decline in real wages for that long. That's a long, long time. And that's the same. And people are getting desperate. They're getting to the edge. And the elites know that. They don't know what to do. They're desperate. They're desperate to try and keep their position, and they're desperate about their economic situation.
And dare Britain I say it, because I think you're probably one of very qualified to answer this question. Dare I say that there might be a better path to solving every one of those economic and other problems to national security that you just mentioned by having a negotiated, just normal relations with Russia to facilitate that? There is another path to accomplish those objectives, is there not?
Of course, but you're not allowed to say that. Look what happens when AfD, Alternative für Deutschland in Germany, which is now the most popular mainstream party in Germany, and they have said we need to have a relationship with, and they have many more of the young people were voting for AfD than the traditional established parties. And they say we want to have a relationship with Russia, and we need to have an understanding for energy sources. Germany produces high-end, or used to produce high-end engineering products on the basis of cheap Russian gas. And you take that away, and the rest of the economy is in complete decline. It is breaking up, and unemployment is rising just across Europe as a consequence. So what happens? They had an election recently in Germany, it wasn't a national election, a regional election in the area, and suddenly all of the AfD candidates were eliminated or died suddenly, seven of them, and the election was a collapse. And look at it anywhere. You try and start a party that advocates against a membership of NATO or joining or having relations with Russia, and the party leaders, suddenly they will find some sort of economic scandal or some sexual pedicule that will enable them to be banned. They're still talking about banning AfD, the most popular party. This is called the cordon sanitaire in Europe. Since the war, the center parties have refused to allow what they call the far left or the far right, and the far right is not far right, and the far left is not far left. It is just these two. So it's just the center. And what Europe has done is demolish all the bridges to the future. And so,
and I'm wondering, is there a similar situation in the UK? Because as I understand it, Labour and Tories, who have always dominated, now that they're moving to the sideline, can you tell us a little bit about what that's about?
Yes, the people became extremely angry with the last Conservative government, viciously angry with it, and wanted to give it a slap. So in the polls, they gave it a very hard slap. But with by virtue of the structures of Parliament, on a tiny minority, then the Labour came into power. And now the popular sentiment hates Labour and the Starmer. We had a huge protest in England not so long ago, about a month ago, supposedly led by Tommy Robinson. But the language, I mean, it was about a million plus. Angry, I mean, really ugly language against the elites, the leadership, Starmer particularly, vicious, violent language against the elites, the oligarchs, the rich establishment, by people, and, you know, and they want a stop to immigration. They want immigrants to leave the country. Because immigrants are seen in the UK, whether that is absolutely correct or not, but they are believed by many of the population to be responsible for violent crime in Britain. And there was a scandal of the grooming gangs a little earlier when Starmer was head of the prosecution service. Of young white working class girls who were taken, kidnapped essentially, and taken to be groomed for, you know, paedophilia in the country. So it's very, it can be quite ugly, and the mood is quite bitter. I'm sure you understand it in a different way from your experience in the United States. But this is general in the West, and there's no answer. That's the problem. Whether it's Conservative or Labour, they're both uniparty. They don't have a sort of a difference. And the only people who will win an election, or can win an election in the future, will be those that can produce a credible plan to create the bread and butter needs of ordinary people. Jobs, living wage, medical care. These things are the essential that have disappeared or are in the process of disappearing in Europe. And they've got to get them, got to provide a credible answer. But you can't do that in Europe or in America because we've had financialization for so many decades, and certainly from 2008, where everything has become, you know, about assets rising. So you have, you know, the market goes up exponentially with the assets, and job openings is declining sharply. And you can't change that because you'd have to change the whole financial system, the banking system, because where does credit go? Does credit go to small businesses? Does credit go to ordinary individuals, or is it all funneled to the big hedge funds and the banks who want to lend against financial assets? And that's the problem, and there's no easy answer. So the many Europeans are deeply alienated against both sides of the establishment.
And is that part of what's going on in Britain with Nigel Farage, I believe, and his move there to try to provide a sample like that? Am I understanding correctly?
Exactly, yes. He's presenting himself as an outsider who can come in and change the system. But, you know, Liz Truss, I don't know if you recall, she was elected a prime minister and she was ousted within about 3 days. Right. And she came, she wrote a book and she's done videos and they're on the net. And she said, you know, I couldn't believe it. I'd just been elected prime minister. And I thought that meant I could organize policies, that I could have a say in policy, that I could make decisions about the economy. And I came in and I found that was not possible. I had no decisions were left to me about the economy, because it was all the technocracy, the professional technocracy who had a certain mindset, and they controlled the system, they controlled the examination, the mechanical processes of government down. They would just block anything that I wanted to do. And they say, no, I'm sorry, madam, you can't do that. I'm afraid it's not going to pass law. There'll be problems in the implementation. And she said, I couldn't believe it. I could do nothing. I was prime minister, just elected, and I was completely blocked from making any economic changes, from making changes about social matters, welfare, immigration, blocked.
Can we assume, therefore, that your current prime minister is a creature of the system and is more than happy to do whatever that bureaucracy desires?
He's put in, parachuted in to do what the establishment wanted. Yes. I mean, that's the system in Europe.
Let me ask you, in the last few minutes that we have here before we let you go, where is this going to go now? If you have Russia saying no to these 28 points, Europe saying no, Ukraine saying no, what does that tell you about where this war is going?
I think it's going to escalation. I think that's where, I mean, I think ultimately the West will not be able to accept with equanimity the defeat of NATO by Russia on the battlefield. And that it'll find that, you'll find people who will say, I just cannot imagine living in a world where Europe or America is not directing the world, that Russia is blocking us. I cannot imagine it. It cannot happen. We will not allow it to happen. And so they go on saying these crazy things about, 1.5 million Russians dead, and they can't, their army is falling apart and things. They don't believe it themselves, but they cannot imagine a world in which the West does not give the orders.
Well, that's a pretty accurate assessment, but that it's based on the facts. The evidence lines up with what you're saying, and the words that are saying being said by the Europeans, by the Ukrainians, don't line up to reality. And at some point, these aspirations aside, they're going to lay the foundation. You tell me if you think I'm wrong, to where it's going to force Russia that the only choice they have is military outright conquest. And that's the only way they're going to get any kind of security. Do you see it differently?
No, that's exactly what Putin said in your little piece that you put up earlier. I mean, he always says these things in a very measured and clean way, but he said, our people require and need us to complete the special military operation in its entirety. That means, denazification, neutralization of Ukraine, and then to have a political process from that position. And, as a former negotiator, I recognize it sometimes when there is just too great an oppositional process. There has to be a trial of strength. And when the trial of strength has happened, then possibly you can negotiate your boundaries and your solution to go in and get some sort of solution from it.
Well, listen, Mr. Ambassador, I cannot tell you how grateful we are to you, the incredible clarity and history and experience that you have and showing us exactly what we're really facing here. One of the things that is so important about having a show like this and having these kinds of words out there is that it is on record. And when things happen the way that the evidence and the elements show that it's likely to happen, when it rolls out that way, then these people can't later on claim that, oh, we didn't ever see it coming. Because we did. And you pointed out in time to we could, even now, with all the disasters that we've done for the last nearly 4 years now, even at this point, it's still possible to avoid the worst outcomes for the people of Ukraine and for European security. But it doesn't look to me like we're going to take it.
Sadly, so.
Well, but in any case, we are going to continue to talk about the truth because we're unintimidated and we're just not going to be stopping because people deserve to know the truth. And you've really showed it to us today. We recommend it. People go to your Substack there. Boy, you probably can't get enough of Ambassador Crook here just on this one show here. So by all means, go and read his stuff there as we do as well to really understand what's happening. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you guys. And by the way, Larry Johnson has just returned recently from Moscow, where he's talked to a lot of these decision makers personally. And he's got some really interesting things to share with us here at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So it's a little over an hour from now. Do not miss that show. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Thank you very much, folks. And we'll see you there on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.